We are going to study a very important part of this Bhakti Yoga, which is symbolism, rituals. What an important part these play in our lives. These days, we find that there are many young people who abhor rituals. They think they are absolutely redundant, outdated, just because they do not understand what is the meaning of these rituals. Part of this ritualism is that human life is based upon rituals, symbols, signs. Civilization would have been impossible without the usage of signs, symbols, and rituals. Let us take some examples. I am speaking to you. And if you do not understand, then I cannot convey my experiences, my thoughts to you. And without conveying my thoughts to you, it is impossible to exchange our knowledge. Civilization, what is it? It is a gradual accumulation of knowledge from the very first person until now. It's a process of accumulative knowledge. Based upon this knowledge, our lifestyle, our culture, our economics, everything is dependent upon this. Suppose we are not able to exchange our views. I cannot convey what is inside me to you, and you cannot do it to me. Where do you think we live? If you want an example, bring up a baby without any contact with this world. Give him food, tube feed him. What do you think he is going to be when he grows up? He remains the same idiot that he had been born with, barely able to survive. So how was this so much of civilization made possible? It is through exchange of knowledge. How did this exchange of knowledge take place? Mainly through one important vehicle. What is that? Language. Language is nothing but a symbol for the medium by which we exchange with each other, interact with each other. So there are funny things are there, which I will... Every person, every nation, in every field of life, has certain signs, certain symbols, certain rituals. So I will try to briefly mention some of these things before I go into the subject. It is well known, of course, every religion has developed its own rituals and symbols. But are we aware that in every field of life, you name it, and I can tell you, it has its own symbols. Economic symbols, then fashion symbols, then national symbols, scientific symbols, political symbols, psychological symbols, and cultural symbols. I'll give you some examples of these things. Economic symbols. You see, how do we convey to the other person that I am economically well off? How does a youth convey to the girls moving on the road that he is very well off? Among animals, birds, they display varied colored, you know, feathers and all those things, and are sounds. Bullfrogs, they are known for making that peculiar sound, puffing their, you know, this part of the body. So it is a sign to the other females that this person is a very strong person. So how does a youth convey this thing to others? In the form of BMW car. A student, a young man who doesn't have a BMW car, not that good. So these are economic, then, you know, there are Mercedes car or Cadillac car and beautiful 6-bedroom houses, if not 600-bedroom houses, and the latest wearable computer. Nowadays, you know, people have got these mobile phones. Only problem is where they kept it, they will not be able to find. So they will ask somebody to give them a ring. Then there are fashion symbols. Do you know what are fashion symbols? Torn pants, shaggy hair, pierced ears, These are the some of the fashion symbols. If you put on a decent dress, you are not supposed to be very fashionable about it. Then, well known, you know, national symbols are there. Flags, flowers, animals, trees, and national anthems. These are all symbols signifying the nation. I am separate. I am different. Then there are political symbols are there. You know, if somebody gained a victory, you know this sign? It stands for V. V means victory. Then every party has its own flags symbolizing the city. You know, Gandhi's is that National Congress in India, that, what is that? Charka and all those things. And some parties are there, you know, two oxen, so like that, all these things. Then there are psychological symbols are there. Psychological symbols means to convey the states of our minds. Somebody is, you know, put his head like this. What does that symbolize? The person is depressed. And this also differs according to the cultural differences. In India, if somebody puts his legs, his head in his hands, it is supposed to be very bad state of mind, very inferior state of mind, depressed state of mind. Whereas here there is one huge statue, you know, the thinking man. If Sri Ramakrishna sees that thinking man, see, what is he thinking of? He is only suffering from depression. Then there are cultural symbols are there. We all use it, cultural symbols. Do you know what cultural symbols are? Good morning, shake hand, good to see you. All these are culture. A person who follows these things is a cultured person, is a good person, educated person, civilized person. But one who doesn't do it, he is not supposed to be a civilized person. All these have their own place. But in no field have these things become so abundant as in religious field. Why so? There is an important reason. The culture, the economics, the politics, the psychology, the culture, all these things are known or experienced fields. Whereas religion falls into the field which we do not normally experience. This one field where one cannot convey one's knowledge to anybody else. This is a point which we have already discussed. For example, Swami Vivekananda wanted to find whether Sri Ramakrishna had experienced God. And he asked, did you see God? Ramakrishna said, yes, I have seen God. But he did not stop there with that answer. He said, I will also show you God. Why? Because if I say I have seen a cow, I don't need to show a cow to you because it is an experience which you can have any time at other places. But if I say I have seen God, you cannot just go outside the Vedanta center and say, let me see whether Swami Dayatmananda has seen God or not. Until you see God yourself, there is no way for you to corroborate my experience. And even if you see, that's absolutely an individual experience only. It forever remains your own experience. You cannot convey it to others. Why? Because God is not an object. It is a subjective experience. No subjective experience can be conveyed to anybody else until that person has experienced it for himself or herself. So, various religions have started attempting to convey their experiences, and the only way they can do it is through symbols, rituals, signs. Not only that, it is a fact that any experience, religious, spiritual or otherwise, can be conveyed only indirectly, not directly. Suppose I have eaten something and it was wonderful. How do I convey my experience to you? I can show a happy face, and without eating also I can show a happy face. How will you know what experience I have? I can only point out this way. You go to the shop, you buy this particular thing and you eat it yourself. When you have eaten it yourself, then you know what I am talking about. Until the time, it remains a kind of inadequate knowledge until you have experience. So to convey one's experience, we can only do that indirectly. And that way, that indirect way is called ritualism, symbolism, signs, etc. And because religion is always a mystery, therefore the richest number of symbols, signs and rituals have developed. I will take one simple example. Especially in India, when we do vesper service, evening, when we do what we call arati service, we use 5 items, and I am sure you know them, and I am not so sure you know them in the correct order. But in special worship is done here, see that there are 5 things we use. First is light, second is water, third is cloth, fourth is flower, and the last is waving of a fan, chamara we call it. What do these things stand for? You know what do these things stand for? They stand, O Lord, I belong to you. This to convey the simple fact that I and you are not separate. I and you are absolutely one and the same substance. To convey this to the Lord, or to convey, to express this experience, because it is done at the end of worship. To convey this experience, we show it ritually, symbolically, in this form, vesper service. Whether you go to a Christian church or you go to a mosque, this is more or less, this is the form that is conveyed. Take another example. In a church, they do mass. The priest does a lot of rituals, and at the end, he breaks the bread and tastes the wine. Right? What does the bread symbolize? The flesh of Christ. What does the wine symbolize? The blood of... It's pure cannibalism. Come to think of it. I'm not joking. It is a remnant of cannibalism, but it is not cannibalism in the old sense, but in a highly significant spiritual sense. That what is cannibalism? An inferior person eats a superior person so that the superior person's qualities become the inferior person's qualities. In other words, the inferior person becomes equivalent to the superior person by the eating of the superior person. Don't do it. This fact was there, but some spiritual people have completely transformed the significance of it. So when a person, a devotee, sincerely he prays to God and then partakes of the bread and then sips the wine, then what happens? The devotee presumes his identity with Christ. It is exactly the same symbol expressed in this vesper service. What is the philosophy behind it? That according to Vedanta, this whole universe has emanated from God. And God manifested or degenerated, as it were. It is a manifestation through 5 Mahabhutas, we call it. 5 elements. These elements are space, air, fire, water and earth. If any person has been sincerely practicing spiritual disciplines, what happens then? He recognizes this fact that I am made out of these 5 elements. And these 5 elements are emanations of God. Therefore, I am God. I recognize my identity with God. A wave recognizes its identity with the ocean. So, what are these 5 elements? Can you tell me about these things? What is the light significant of? Fire. And then water is symbolic of fire. Then the cloth is symbolic of directions. The space. Space. Digambara. Shiva is called Digambara, one who is clothed in the space itself. Then the flower is symbolizing the earth. Then the vayu, the air element. all these five elements, it is showing, O Lord, these five elements have come from you. Before a person attained to that state, he says, I am giving you this, I am giving you that, I am offering you this, I am offering you that. But at the end he realizes, he himself belongs to God. Whatever he thinks his also belongs to God. When a person recognizes that simple truth, I am one with God, the unity of the individual with the Supreme Lord, Supreme Reality. This is the symbolism of this arati. Of course, we do it without knowing the meaning, but we feel elevated by doing this. We feel satisfied, but this is the symbolism of it. Then the worship becomes complete. No more need for worship. Why? Because who is going to worship whom? There is no I here. All that remains is God. Look at the life of Sri Ramakrishna. He started with ritualism. When a time came, he used to go and pluck flowers and come to the shrine, and he used to make beautiful garlands and offer it to the Divine Mother. Then after some time he realized that everything belongs to the Divine Mother. The seat on which he is sitting and the utensils with which he is worshipping the Mother and the food and flower offerings that he was giving and the Vedi, the altar and the image itself. Everything is a vibration of the pure consciousness. After this, that's why, you know, he took up flowers in his hands to offer to the Divine Mother. Where did his hands go? Went straight to his head, and the flowers fell on himself. And when the food offering time came, he said symbolically, Mother, do you want me to eat first? No, it is a sacrilege to offer something which has been already eaten. But who was Ramakrishna at that time? He himself became the Divine Mother. A cat entered into the shrine room. He fed the cat. Was he feeding a cat? He was feeding the Divine Mother. Oh Mother, you came in this form now. Let me worship you in this form. After these experiences, one day he went out to pluck flowers and he saw the trees have already offered all their flowers to the Divine Lord, you know. And then he said, why should I pluck flower? They have already been offered to the Lord. This is called Virat Puja. Now, the purpose of his going through these rituals has become fructified. There is no more necessity for any rituals. This is an important point we have to keep in mind. Rituals by themselves do not make any meaning unless they transform us into a higher state. So, what is the definition of a ritual? After all, every ritual is an action. A person sits, a person prostrates. Take another example. You come to the shrine and prostrate yourself on the ground, don't you? What is it? It is a symbol. It's a ritual, it is a symbol. What is it a symbol of? Self-surrender. You surrender yourself to the Lord. But what do we do? After making pranams, we get up and say, what did you do? My daughter did not pass the exams. What are you doing? That's not self-surrender. The idea is, O Lord, whatever you decide to do, I accept it. I know it would be good. This is what is called symbolism of prana. There was in South India, there was a big center. And South Indian pranam is a larger pranam. It's called Sashtanga pranam. The whole body falls on the floor. At 4 o'clock, the temple opens. All the novices and swamis stream in, and then they sit, and there will be Vedic chanting and there will be sitting for meditation. Or they meditate, after that they chant Vedic chanting. So one newly joined novice had entered into the shrine room and with great devotion prostrated himself with outstretched arms. And people were, what a great devotion. 1 minute passed, 2 minutes passed, 3 minutes passed. He was not getting up at all. And slowly the sounds of snoring started coming. This is in yoga terminology. It is called Shavasana. It's a very restful pose. So, we see how important it is these kind of ritual symbols. Without that, we cannot progress. So, what is the definition of a ritual? A ritual is a sacramental act whereby the individual soul is united with the Supreme Soul. It is a sacrament. Sacrament means it is a sacred act. Sacredness belongs to God. It is a godly act. You give a flower to somebody. That's not a sacrament. It is just an exchange of ordinary love. But you offer a flower to the Lord. Thereby you become elevated. You offer tea or coffee to your friend or to your relative. That is an ordinary act of worldliness. But you offer it to the Lord. Immediately it becomes an act of sacrament because it reminds you of the divine. It purifies and it slowly brings us near. So this is very important, this definition. That act which brings us nearer to God, that is a sacrament, that is a ritual. This is the exact meaning of pratika. We will come very shortly to that. Pratika means, the Sanskrit meaning of the word pratika means coming nearer. So it is used in a wider sense. Any icon, any image or any symbol that is used in religions for worshipping the Lord, for reminding ourselves of the Lord, this is called pratika. There are two types of these things. One is called pratika, one is called pratima. A three-dimensional symbol is called pratima. Means, I will come to that point a little shortly. So, if anybody wants to progress in any field of life, then these rituals, these symbols, all these things are very necessary. So, we use three words are used. Signs, symbols and rituals. You know, signs are the inferior, the lowest class in this ritualism or symbolism. You know what is a sign? Suppose there is an arrow sign. What does it indicate? Go that way or something is here, office, and there is a arrow sign. These are called only signs. Beyond just directing that person, they have no further value. Whereas, symbols and rituals, they have deep meaning which affect our lives. And if I am talking to you, and then I will show my fist like that. What does it mean? You know what it means? Well, you see, there was a time when the Jews were being oppressed by the Christians in Rome. So the Jews were also very stubborn people. They were also fighting. They don't want to get out. The Christians want all the Jews to get out of Rome and go anywhere else, but not live there. And the Jews said, we have been here for generations. We are not going to move from this place. So there was almost going to be a civil war. So there was a Pope. He was a kind man. He decided, why all this bloodshed? Let us have a conversation with these Jews and see what we can do, whether peacefully any solution can be attained. So a representative of Jews was called for, but unfortunately this Jew cannot talk Italian and the Pope cannot talk the Jewish language. So they said, let us have a talk. And they sat in a room, and depending on the outcome, the fate of the Jews will be decided. So the Pope, he showed like this, because sign language is the only language they can communicate with. And the Jew took out his heel and did like this. And then the Pope said these three fingers, and the Jew showed one finger. And then the Pope took out his bread and wine. And the Jew took out his apple, and the Pope hung his head, went back and said, I can't do anything with the Jews, let these fellows remain. So everybody was waiting. What happened? How did you come to this? He said, you know, I said that God has created, this whole thing is glory of God. And that fellow had the temerity to say, this earth also has been created by God. Then what happened? Then he said, I will not allow even 3 Jews to remain here. Then he said, even if 1 Jew is there, he will fight to the last. He is not going to leave this place. Then I said, you know, bread and then wine. He said, you know, Christ is the only salvation through bread and wine. He took out his, you stupid fellow, don't you know, Adam and Eve, how they fell? This is apple, maybe sign of that. He has the answer for everything. What can I do? And the Jew went back. He said, what happened? He said, you know, the Pope threatened me that not only on earth, even on the sky also I will not allow you to remain. I said, no, as long as I am here, I am going to fight. Then he showed 3. Then I said, you know, not 3 Jews. Even if we are 1 Jew, then we will fight to death. Then what happened? He took out his lunch and I took out my lunch. You know, sign language is the one way of communicating. You know, those who cannot hear, you know, on the televisions they have a special program. They go on doing like this. It's a perfectly understandable language. So a sign is the lowest or most inferior type of communicating certain meaning. It is the lowest order. But the higher order comes symbolism. In Vedic times, there was very interesting development has taken place. The goal is to become one with the highest reality, Brahman. But here is a person who is individualized. This is called individual self. What is an individual self? Self-individualized, limited by body and mind. How does this union take place? So they have developed what is called Vidya. Vidya means a vehicle of knowledge. And I will give you an example of this. There is something called Madhu Vidya. Just to tell you, the whole Vedic scriptures, Vedas, are full of these vidyas, hundreds of these special techniques of contemplation have been completely lost because of copyright problems. You know what is copyright problem? There is a guru who discovers something and he passes it on to some worthy disciple or student or son, and but in course of time this knowledge of this technique was been passing from father to, from teacher to student, from father to son. At some point, people became degenerated, and they developed, if I pass on this one to anybody, then my family will suffer. I will pass it on only to my own family member, my son, usually the eldest son. But in those days, you know, people used to die because of wild animals or some disease or like that. Once this person dies without passing it on, that particular technique is lost forever. This is how hundreds of Upanishads, hundreds of these techniques have been lost. But at present, there are 32 beautiful techniques. These are called Vidyas. One such Vidya, I will just give you a taste of it. It is called Madhu Vidya, honey, knowledge of honey. You all have knowledge of honey, is it not? Now, this is a very special technique, which I will shortly give it to you. This is from the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, which says, Yam prithivi sarvesham bhutana madhu. That is the word, madhu. Asyai prithivyai sarvani bhutani madhu yaschayam asyam prithivyam tejomayo amrutamayah purushah yascha ayam adhyatmam sharira tejomayo amrutamayah purushah ayam eva sayo ayam atma idam amritam idam brahma idam sarvam. This whole thing is nothing but self. This whole thing is nothing but immortal. This whole thing is nothing but Brahma. Everything that we experience is nothing but Brahman, the highest reality. That is the goal of this. If somebody properly practices, you can say meditation, contemplation of this particular technique, then the fruit is he attains Brahman. What is the result of attaining to Brahman? Everything becomes madhu. Madhu means honey. Honey means bliss. Here honey means bliss. So how does it work? So he says this just simple English translation. This earth is the honey of all beings. It is the essence and milk of all beings. People suck this earth as if they suck honey, which has such a beautiful taste. And earth sucks everybody and everything as if they are honey to eat. The earth is the honey of all, and everyone is the honey of the earth. The earth is absorbed into the being of everything, and everything is absorbed into the being of this earth. That is the meaning of saying that earth is the honey of all beings, and all beings are the honey of the earth. This is the simple English translation. Translations now do not give the insight into these techniques. They are just but signs. What is the sign? You practice this technique for long, long time. Just one part of this, what is called Madhuvidya. Only one particular part, this earth. Take this earth. We are born of this earth. We are sustained by this earth. And we return back at the end unto this earth. Is it not a fact? Where from are we? This body has come. This means two things. One, I am not an individual. First of all, I am connected. It's like a bubble that comes out of the ocean. So one bubble is here and 1,000 bubbles are elsewhere. What is the connection between this? All the bubbles have only one connection. What is that? The ocean. They come from the ocean. They are sustained by the ocean and they go back to the ocean. This whole body has come out of earth, food, and it is sustained by food, and it goes back as food to the earth. This is a constant recycling is going on. So this gives us identity. I am not an individual at all. I am the universal self. I am one with the entire universe. Even if there is one being or one thing produced out of this earth, I am that particular object. See the beautiful, the individual has expanded his identity into the universal. But it cannot be done by intellectually thinking about it. This is not an intellectual process. Now here is an important point. We all practice meditation. Meditation is not an intellectual process. Meditation is becoming one with the idea on which we are contemplating. Suppose I say that I love Ramakrishna. Now, is it possible to show your love to a baby with a fork? You take a baby, take a fork with a gloved hands, and baby, I love you, take the fork and then go on bringing it on the back. Does it show your love? What is love? You must become love. Your look, your very touch, your everything conveys that feeling called love. Simply people say, good to see you. Do you believe for a moment that they are very glad to see you? Because it's only just an intellectual idea at best. But they do not even think when they say about it. When they shake hands, good morning, you say. Do you really mean that if the morning is very good? This is supposed to lead us to that idea. That is the usefulness of these rituals. So when practiced for a long, long time, we become one with that idea. That is the real true meditation. There would be no difference between the meditator and the meditated. That is the definition of meditation. When this kind of vidyas are practiced, then the individual soul loses its individualness and it gains its true identity with its universality. That is the crux of these so-called vidyas. There are Dahara Vidya, Madhu Vidya, Sandilya Vidya. I will not go into the details. These Vedic techniques of meditation have become expanded, have become transformed, because time, history invariably change them into different molds, expressions. And at the present time, we have several types of these expressions. One is what is called puja, celebrations, rituals. And another is called mantras. Another is called mandalas. Another is called yantras. Have you heard about these things? Mantra you have heard. Have you heard about mandala? Mandalas are certain diagrammatical things that are drawn, usually practiced by Buddhists. Whereas Hindus, invariably they use what are called yantras. And especially in South India, I say South India because wherever temples are standing for a long time, and there these things have become more popular and more practiced. Unfortunately, in North India, these Muslims have demolished most of the temples. And along with that, these things also have practically disappeared. Whereas in South India, if you go, centuries old temples are still there. And even you can imagine, in the 12th century, Ramanuja was one of the most important teachers who had introduced these wonderful varieties of ceremonial worships, rituals, which are still going on here. By reading the life of Sri Ramakrishna, you also come to know a particular type of religious discipline called tantras. Tantras are full of these different types of deities, devatas we call them, different type of bija mantras, seed mantras, different types of yantras for each deity. When we do homa, we draw that on the sand or this thing. And different types of ritual, special type of rituals. And even this whole human body becomes a kind of vehicle for rituals by touching various parts of this body. Really, these things, they are not the products of human intellect. They are the products of great sages' intuitive understandings. Because when Sri Ramakrishna practiced these things, he could actually feel the effect of these. Just to remind you, I will give you one example. There is a particular mantra. It is called Agni Mantra, which is Bija Mantra for fire. The mantra is Ram, not English Ram. R-A-M, not R-U-M. So, we are asked to repeat that mantra and sprinkle water all around when we are doing the worship. The purpose of this mantra is, as it were, a wall of fire springs around the practitioner, protecting him from all sorts of obstacles, especially supernatural beings like ghosts and spirits and other things. Of course, most of you don't believe in these things. Even you think you are very advanced. Yes, you know, this is the very peculiar age we are living in. We don't believe in angels. We don't believe in gods and goddesses. We don't believe in these ghosts and spirits and all those things. These are all as much of a reality as we are reality. Different strata, different manifestations of God. So some of them can do us harm. So these great souls have discovered this particular thing prevents all these beings. It keeps, as it were, you know, what you call firewall. You don't believe it. But every computer man pays money and buys firewalls. Is it not? Shell money through your pocket. Either Norton firewall or McAfee firewall or all those things. But our sages have discovered long back these security breaches can be stopped by simple the ritual of uttering this mantra sincerely. When you have read, when Sri Ramakrishna used to utter this mantra and sprinkle water, He said, I have actually seen a wall of fire springing up and protecting me from all obstacles. Do you remember that? Please go and read The Great Master, then you will see. Anyway, this is an example to show tantras have specialized in this kind of rituals, symbols, etc. that we are talking about. Now, importantly, there are three kinds of symbols that we use. Whatever be the religion, we use it. One is called pratika. Pratika means just a iconic symbol, a diagram, or it could be a piece of stone, it could be a picture, etc. This pratika also has expanded into image, pratima. Three-dimensional symbol is called image. And image is, you know, image of Christ, image of Rama, image of Ramakrishna, whatever it is. So these are called visual symbols, because we'll come to that point. There are what is called visual symbols, there are what is called sound symbols, and there is what is called symbols belong to the mind, manasika. These are the three important parts of symbols leading to this ritualism. Now, the meaning of pratika, I had already told, means that which helps us to come near. Come near means what? That which unites the individual soul with the supreme soul. Whatever that be, that is called pratika or a symbol. That is the real meaning of symbol. Now, these are visual symbols and sound symbols. It is not that there are only two types of symbols. Why these two symbols have become so famous, and how many symbols can be possible? Five types of symbols are possible. Why five types? Because we have got five sense organs. We have got eyes, we have got ears, we have got the sense of smell, sense of taste, sense of touch. Let me give a funny example, you know, what is called smell symbolism. Very important, smell symbolism is very important. Just to give an example, suppose you enter into our shrine room and you get there fried pakoda smell. Where will be your mind? But suppose you have this smell of incense, beautiful incense smell. What happens immediately? So why did this happen? Because of our experience, whenever we went to a restaurant, we get what? Fried pakoda smell. But whenever we go to a temple, what do we get? In the sense of incense smell. You know, funny thing happened. When I first joined the order, and I came to the North India, and whichever temple I am entering, I don't feel any spirituality at all. So I was wondering, what is this? These North Indians, they don't have any spirituality at all. Where you enter any South Indian temple, it's full of spiritual vibration. Then I discovered, why is it so? Because from my birth, I have been accustomed to smell camphor. And this, you know, kumkum, they call it sindoor smell. It is a special smell. And the whole South Indian temples are, you know, heapfuls, basketfuls of this kumkum and other powder, you know, they will be offering to the Divine Mother, Lalita, Kamakshi, Meenakshi and all those things. Naturally, from my birth, I have associated this particular smell, means it is a temple and it is full of. And whereas when I come to North India, I don't get that smell at all. That is how I discovered there was no spirituality in the North Indian. Just to make fun of you, know, we have 2 years training course in training center. Every novice who joins the Ramakrishna order has to go to Belur Math and live there for 2 years getting training. And there are Bengali novices, South Indian novices. And the Bengali novices always thought themselves as superior. You know, you fellows, Ramakrishna is a Bengali. We are a superior race. You know, he's an incarnation of God. And you don't have incarnation of God. And South Indian novices are not that bad. So they used to say it is absolutely true. Mr. Ramakrishna is an incarnation of God and he is born in Bengal. Why was he born? It is said in the Gita, Yada Yada Yada. Where is, wherever there is a decline of virtue and growth of vice, there only God incarnates. Perfectly all right. So you see how much we are slaves to these sights and sounds and smells and all those things. But they can also help us because we have to progress through the help of these five sense organs. Incidentally, what is spiritual progress? Gradual purification of our sense organs, five sense organs. The eyes want to see beautiful forms in this world. No, see the beauty of God. The ears want to hear very agreeable sounds in this world, worldly sounds. No, you purify the sound means you only hear sacred sounds, spiritual sounds, devotional songs, praises of God. And you want to smell, you want to eat, you want to touch pleasant things. Gradually turn the direction in which these sense organs are accustomed to travel. Connect them somehow with God. That is called spiritual progress. The moment we see, we get greater amount of happiness by seeing an image of God, by reading a scripture, by hearing about God, by going to the temple and lighting up an incense, by smelling beautiful flowers offered to the Lord, then we can definitely know our mind is getting purified and it is slowly progressing towards God. To put it in another way, what is spiritual progress? The more we remember God, means we are connected with God, the more we are advanced in spiritual life. So the sights, the sounds, the tastes, the smells, the touches, if these can remind us of God, so that all the time we are in contact with God, that is called spiritual progress. Then a time will come when there will be no separation from the idea of God at all, because we have internalized all these things. Then that is the end of spiritual practice. So what is spiritual progress? Gradual purification of these five sense organs and directing them towards God. Another way of putting out this is, we become emotional. Our emotions are connected with what? With these five sense organs. You see somebody, and that somebody is very beautiful to look at, you feel attracted, you feel happy. You see somebody who is not that attractive and you feel repulsed. We are swinging between these two. You hear agreeable sound, somebody tells you are wonderful and you feel very happy. And somebody says you are not good and immediately you become depressed. Is it not? All emotions are connected with only with these five sense organs. Now, don't kill the emotions, you cannot. But what you do now, let these emotions be associated with God. That is called Bhakti Yoga, the path of devotion. Emotion purified and directed towards God is called devotion. That is what we are discussing here. So, do you see now how all, what are all these symbols? These symbols are something, it is purifying our worldly associations of these very things that we experience, and instead of that, bringing our attention to God. So, as I said, there are three types of symbols. What are they? The visual symbols and the sound symbols. The visual symbols, you know, an icon or an image or a diagram, etc. Now, among human beings, there are two types of people. Among the five sense organs, we have got five sense organs. Two sense organs are the most important among the five. Do you know what are they? The eyes. Our practically 99% of our life is dependent upon these sights and sounds. Just imagine a world when we cannot see, when we cannot hear. Practically all knowledge is, as it were, destroyed. So that is why the religious people have also to take advantage of these two, visual symbols and sound symbols. What are the sound symbols? They are called mantras. So there are, among the human beings, all do not have equal dominance of either the sight or sound. It's a very interesting psychological fact. You see, there are some people, many people are visual. They remember the faces, but they don't remember the names. You see the point? And so these people, if they are talented, they become good painters, good sculptors, good dramatists, etc. Then there are people in whom the sound becomes dominant. Such people, they become good singers because they have got wonderful, you know, pitch, knowledge of pitch. You can, if you want to know, just keep quiet when the arati is going on after six. You will see that there are some voices which in no way go anywhere near the singer. The people who in whom this sound is predominant, they remember names and they become good writers. And they have their own special ways of expressing their talent. So you see, religion has to provide to both these types of people. And therefore, those who are visually dominant, for them, the worship of these images, icons, etc., these are very useful. But for those, some people don't care. They cannot even imagine a particular form, let alone a form. They cannot even imagine a simple light. You know, it is one of the meditations. Meditate upon the light, not any particular image or form. But even they cannot, they try their level best, but only blankness comes. But ask them that you meditate upon a sound, you imagine a sound, for example, Om or Soham. Just imagine, they have no problem at all. So to cater to that kind of people, sound symbols also have come. So it is important for us to recognize into which category we fall. So, suppose we fall into the category of visual dominance. Then for such people, don't have any image worship, don't have anything connected with these pictures or icons or all those things. Just sit and then go and meditate. They find it very, very difficult. That is why Hindu sages have recognized and evolved thousands of varieties of these visual symbols for the aid of these people. And then the sound symbols for the other type of people. You just sit, and it is called Nama Upasana. Upasana means contemplation. Pratikopasana, visual symbolization. Namopasana, contemplation of the sound in the form of mantras. Then there is a third type of upasana, manasika upasana. Some people cannot focus on the sights, forms, they cannot focus on sounds, but they can focus on ideas. Give the person an idea and the person can focus. Usually these people become what we call abstract thinkers. You know, there's an abstract mathematics or abstract painting. You know what is abstract painting? A painting which the artist don't know why or how he did. And the critic is trying to explain how wonderful it has been made without understanding to a public who are least interested. That is called abstract painting. So this abstract, some people can think very abstract. Indians are very good because that's why the software engineers, it is not a sound symbol. It is not a visual symbol. It is a deep thinking on the ideas, abstract thinking. The people in whom these ideas are predominant, they become what is called abstract thinkers. That is easy for them to do that. So to cater to them, a third type of manasika upasana has been delineated in our scriptures. So these are the three types of what is called symbolism used in religion, especially in the Vedanta, is the visual symbols, the sound symbols, the ideational symbols. And this is such an interesting subject. Some more details with examples I will go through in my next class. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.